McPherson on tenor saxophone with Oliver Gannon guitar, Steve Wallace on bass, and Jake Hanna drums. It's a minute after 4 o'clock. This is Fresh Air, and you're tuned to WHYY 91 FM. There's a religious revival in America, and many newly religious Americans are not returning to the churches and synagogues they grew up with. Instead, they're joining religious groups outside of the mainstream or reinterpreting the teachings and rituals of the religions they were born into. This phenomena is the focus of a special four-part series titled On This Side of Paradise, A Look at American Religions. We're featuring the series Tuesdays at 4 o'clock during the month of October. The series concludes next Tuesday at 4, when the subject will be Singing a New Song, The Catholic Left. Today's edition is titled In the Name of Allah, American Muslims. In one half hour at the conclusion of this documentary, I'll be joined in the studio by one of the people featured on the documentary, Imam Ali, the founder and leader of the Philadelphia Mosque of the American Muslim Mission. When he joins us, our phones will be open for your questions and comments. If you'd like to jot down our phone number in the meantime, it's 923-2774. On This Side of Paradise was produced at WHYY-FM for Temple University's Religion Department. Maeve McGoran is the producer, Ellen Cherry and Anthony Mateo, project directors.
All of us have suffered here in this country political oppression at the hands of the white man, economic exploitation at the hands of the white man, and social degradation at the hands of the white man. Now, in speaking like this doesn't mean that we're anti-white, but it does mean we're anti-exploitation. We're anti-degradation. We're anti-oppression. And if the white man doesn't want us to be anti him, let him stop oppressing and exploiting and degrading.
In the early 1960s, the words of Malcolm X echoed the rage felt by members of the black separatist group, the Nation of Islam. 20 years later, many of those same members make up the American Muslim Mission. Their leader, Wallace Muhammad, offers a radically different message.
Our claim as on the name Children of God is not a claim based on skin color. It's based on our own righteousness, you see? So we are Muslims not because we are Jews. We are Muslims not because we are Gentiles. We are Muslims not because we are black Americans. We are Muslims because we have the nature to recognize and to accept a body of truth that have rules that establishes peace. And a person who's divinely peaceful is a Muslim. That's what the word means.
In this program, we'll look at some of the reasons for the transformation of the Nation of Islam from a powerful black nationalist organization to an essentially middle-class body of Orthodox Muslims. Islam is the fastest-growing religion in the world. From the Middle East and Africa to Russia, China, and the rest of Asia, Muslim populations are expanding. Dr. Ismail Al-Faruqi of the Religion Department of Temple University accounts for its appeal.
Primarily, I would say Islam is growing because of its universalism, of its world affirmation, of its humanism. One could also add its rationalism. Its doctrine, as you know, presents a very rational view of the universe. It emphasizes human innocence. It emphasizes human capacity to save oneself, as well as responsibility to do so. And the content of the moral imperative or the religious imperative in Islam does not run against the grain of nature or the grain of history. All these combine to make Islam quite attractive to the humans of the world.
It is widespread. It's just about a Muslim in every family, you know, somewhere along the line.
There are no statistics for the number of Muslims in the United States, but it has grown rapidly in the past two decades, especially among blacks. Zenobia Shah has been a Muslim for 9 years. She explains why she left Christianity for Islam.
The self-esteem as far as being Bilalian or black, and doing for self-independence, and really not falling victim to an inferiority complex as far as being a human being. As far as Christianity, it was just so many things I couldn't identify with, you know. In Al-Islam, we don't have the emotionalism of the singing, the organs, you know. It could really be scary for a young child.
The Muslim group Zenobia Shah joined was the Nation of Islam, at that time a black separatist organization with a powerful leader, Minister Elijah Muhammad. But the Nation of Islam's roots go back to the 1930s, when it was founded by the mysterious W.D. Fard. Fard, an Arab or Asian itinerant, taught Elijah Muhammad a religion that was a cross between Islam and Christianity. He said that the destiny of all American blacks was to be Muslim, because they comprised the ancient lost found nation of Islam. And he taught that all whites were incarnate devils. Fard disappeared in 1933, and a new leader took his place, Elijah Muhammad, who preached that Fard was really Allah himself. Monroe Anderson, a Chicago Tribune reporter who has covered the Nation of Islam for 6 years, says the young movement grew quickly.
It went from just a very local organization in Detroit, where he basically was collecting pimps and prostitutes and petty street crooks, to an international organization with business connections and a very well respected and in many cases feared system.
Elijah Muhammad's ultimate goal was for American blacks to establish a separate nation. As a step toward that goal, he emphasized black economic independence.
When he was firmly establishing the Nation of Islam, he had the farms, he had the black banks, he had the black businesses, whether it was the bakeries or the grocery store, the land holdings. They were importing fish from other countries. This idea of blacks developing businesses where they can hire other blacks, and therefore you don't have to necessarily go begging to white corporate America for jobs because you can employ your own, is now becoming quite popular. I think the man was visionary along those lines.
By the early 1960s, Elijah Muhammad claimed to have 500,000 followers. Many joined the Fruit of Islam, a body of men who studied martial arts and proselytized aggressively on the street corners. Hardworking members could rise quickly within the organization.
The thing that was interesting, most interesting about Elijah Muhammad and his movement, unlike almost all other black religious movements where you have a charismatic figure in America, is he always made room. He always promoted other people. There was room for change in his movement. I think that's why it's endured longer than most others. He'd allow other people to come to the forefront, become speakers. That's how we got Malcolm X, for example.
And now you're facing a situation where the young Negroes coming up, they don't want to hear that turn the other cheek stuff. No! In Jacksonville, those were teenagers. They were throwing Molotov cocktails. Negroes have never done that before. But it shows you there's a new deal coming in. There's a new thinking coming in. There's new strategy coming in. It'll be Molotov cocktails this month, hand grenades next month, and something else next month. It'll be ballots or it'll be bullets. It'll be liberty or it will be death. The only difference between this kind of death, it'll be reciprocal.
Malcolm X's electrifying personality and extraordinary talents as a speaker helped focus national attention on the movement. In the early 1960s, at the height of the civil rights struggle, the Nation of Islam's anti-white rhetoric was denounced by more moderate black leaders. But though the Nation spoke boldly, it took almost no direct political action for civil rights. By 1963, Malcolm had become dissatisfied with the Nation's political isolationism, and other Nation leaders resented his role as Elijah's spokesperson. His rash comments after the Kennedy assassination and his discovery of a sexual scandal involving Elijah led to his expulsion from the movement. In 1964, Malcolm made a pilgrimage to Mecca, and for the first time, he was exposed to Orthodox Islam. He was startled to see Muslims of all races worshiping together, and he began to reassess his ideas on the iniquity of whites. When he returned to the United States, Malcolm began organizing a new mosque and a new black political movement. But on February 21, 1965, Malcolm X, now El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, was assassinated.
Malcolm was killed. Two theories, of course. One, that the Philadelphia mosque was responsible for. The other, that the CIA or the FBI or somebody was responsible for it. There are people in jail from the Philadelphia mosque. But there's, to this very day, there's still a lot of controversy as to whether they actually did it or did not. And that may be one of those mysteries that we'll have to live with forever.
Malcolm X was not the only Nation member interested in Orthodox Islam. Elijah Muhammad's son Wallace was expelled twice for questioning the divinity of W.D. Fard. He returned to the fold in 1965, 1 week after Malcolm's assassination, and Elijah declared him his successor.
I was told that during a conversation, there was a meeting with a number of the imams, and Elijah was there, and Wallace was being criticized because at that point he had already started preaching Orthodox Islam and had moved away from the catechisms that Elijah had perpetuated over the decades. And some of Wallace's detractors had said were tattling. They were informing Elijah that his son, who he was choosing as his successor, was preaching against what he had preached. And Elijah was overjoyed. This is what I've been told. Okay, and he said, this has to be the new direction. Again, the way the story I was told went was that when Wallace was born, at that time, Elijah decided he would be his successor. He would be the next leader. I mean, at birth, it was decided. And that never changed. The interesting thing in meeting and talking with Wallace Muhammad is one is just immediately impressed with the spiritualism of the man. He is the most serene and spiritual person you can run across. I mean, he's just incredible that way. It's almost as if he's felt and believed that, or it was predetermined or something.
We are not a people who want to set up some powerful kingdom to enslave other people, but we are people who would like to see everybody like this. So we make pilgrimage to one center, and we invite everybody to make pilgrimage to that center. We all don't live in Mecca. Muslims are in Arabia, Muslims are in Africa, Muslims are in Asia, Muslims are in Europe, Muslims are in America, Muslims are in the isles of the world. But Muslims have one center called the Kaaba at Mecca.
Elijah Muhammad died in 1975, and Wallace took his place. Within 2 years, the movement was transformed. He changed the name from the Nation of Islam to the World Community of Al-Islam in the West to the American Muslim Mission. He disbanded the Fruit of Islam, opened membership in the American Muslim Mission to all races, and made it clear that he expected his followers to adhere to the five pillars or basic tenets of Islam, belief in Allah and Muhammad his prophet, daily prayer, charity, fasting, and the pilgrimage to Mecca.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
This is the national broadcast of Mr. Muhammad Speaks, the program that's dedicated to truth and justice for all people of the earth. And now we present to you with honor the Chief Minister of the Nation of Islam, the Honorable W.D. Muhammad.
W.D. Muhammad.
Who is the man with the master plan?
W.D. Muhammad.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim.
Wallace's changes have been so successful that today members are revising their memories of Elijah.
The Honorable Elijah Muhammad's activity was a generating force that stimulated and awakened social consciousness of the people who he was a member of. That is the African-American people. We refer to them as Bilalian people.
Imam Shamsuddin Ali is head of the American Muslim Mission Mosque and school in Philadelphia.
He dealt with the social derangement of the people's minds. And that social derangement, we can clearly see, was related to the persons, particularly African-American people, having no amount of confidence, no amount of awareness of themselves. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad knew that was a psychological weight upon the people's minds. So he made them think of themselves as being great people. He used such great emphasis as to say, you are the original man, you are the first man, your pigmentation of skin indicates and shows that you are from the earth and the other people are not from the earth. He was not a religious teacher as such. He really gave the impact to our life in regards to belief in God, because he kept pointing out, he kept saying Allah, he kept saying the Quran was the book, he kept saying religion of Al-Islam is the religion that people need and that we need and we have to follow, and it's our religion and we should be Muslims. He kept saying that. But he never taught us the five pillars even, which is really actually essential in the religion of Al-Islam. He didn't do it. I'm sure he knew the five pillars, but he didn't teach the five pillars to us.
Dr. Ismail Al-Faruqi.
I personally do not doubt that Elijah Muhammad was a genius who wanted to find a way of resurrecting the so-called lost found nation of Islam in the West. This lost found nation, he assumed, was the black people. And having suffered at the hands of the whites for hundreds of years, their identity had been smothered and then obliterated. And Elijah Muhammad's movement was one of that sought to restore the identity, the non-American, the Afro, the African identity to these people. Unfortunately, it took a racist turn at its beginning, as it were, thinking that the best way to counter evil is with a greater evil. And in accordance with that, the best way to counter white racism is to preach a black racism. But as soon as Elijah Muhammad died, it was time for his son, Wallace D. Muhammad, to make a change and to counter white racism now that a substantial number of Afro-Americans have rediscovered their identity, to counter white racism with the true medicine for it, namely Islamic universalism.
It's nothing short of a miracle that he's been able to make such a dramatic change in so short a time. Of course, his biggest problem was the followers of the old faith. And the chief proponent of that was Minister Louis Farrakhan, who at the time was in charge of the New York mosque.
Your life is not worth a quarter in America.
Right.
Your life is less than a dog's life in America. The white man will sit a dog at his table and will not even ask you to come in by the back door. He'll pick up a stray dog on the highway, and he will leave you on the highway hungry, naked, and out of doors. He will stop your car if you run over a dog, but will run over black men, black women, and black children day and night, shoot you down like a beast in the street, and then justify it by saying, you attacked them. Don't you tell me that we don't need a savior.
We need a
phone for the black man in America.
He had a significant following, just because he's a very eloquent speaker. Since then, there's been a split, with Farrakhan reviving the old Nation of Islam, complete with the Fruit of Islam, the paramilitary group. They're building a mosque. On Chicago's south side. They're preaching the old ideology, the white man is devil. Farrakhan even preaches the concept that Elijah Muhammad, being God, is not dead. And he challenges anyone to bring the body and show it as evidence that the man is in fact dead.
Brothers and sisters, a savior is born. I know you think Elijah is dead, but I'm here to tell you he is as alive as you sitting right down in that seat. Is he alive and well? But he's in power now.
Right.
I'm coming to you, United States government. I'm coming to you, Arab.
Come on.
Because I am his witness.
Louis Farrakhan's organization seems to have fewer members than the American Muslim Mission, though both groups have smaller memberships than the Nation of Islam under Elijah. The AMM does not see Louis Farrakhan as a threat. Imam Ali.
I don't see any real problems or any large number of people adhering themselves to what is being expounded by Minister Louis Farrakhan. Minister Louis Farrakhan, of course, proclaims that he is the one that should be successor to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and that the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad were in fact and are in fact to be taken literal, and that they were standard in their meaning, and therefore they do not need any interpretation. It's a little bit of a working of isolation there in that message, which excludes you from the rest of the general order of society, and I don't think that the people of the world today are willing to accept that.
Nevertheless, there are signs that the Nation of Islam's isolationist attitudes may be changing. Louis Farrakhan has made public addresses to the 20th anniversary rally of Martin Luther King's March on Washington and to Jesse Jackson's organization PUSH. He called for people of all races and all religions to unite in the struggle against all kinds of oppression. A spokesperson for Minister Farrakhan said this does not indicate a departure from Elijah Muhammad's teachings. Monroe Anderson.
And so you have that part of the movement continuing with Elijah's old ideologies, and then you have the American Muslim Mission, which has gone into mainstream America, into mainstream Islam, and a totally different approach.
AMM members wholeheartedly endorse the new direction the movement is taking.
Yeah, not only are they now Orthodox Muslims, but they are flag-waving Americans. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. I mean, they boast of it now. I mean, this isn't some observation I'm making or some type of analysis I'm drawing. I mean, they will point out the ways they have become very entrenched in the American way of life. They are now talking about running candidates, and in fact, they have in some instances in political races. They talk about their lawyers, they talk about their people entrenched in the system in various ways. They're talking about having people established on school boards, and they, as part of their religious teachings now, They tell their followers that you must register to vote. That's part of your responsibility to country.
Imam Ali.
Well, we want to have, as is so advocated in America, equal representation. Equal representation. We feel that if we are in an area, like one concentrated area, and it's mostly African American people there, in the way of justice, in the way of right activities for development, I think that the representation there should be representation of African American people. I think the police department, the fire department, all of those entities should reflect that they are in an African American community. I think the stores and the factories should also reflect that.
Wallace Muhammad has built on Elijah's old principles of black economic independence. He founded a national purchasing cooperative called the Big Buy, which enables AMM members to buy everything from clothing to appliances as a block. Wallace has also launched a campaign to remove racial images of the divine, both because Islam forbids making pictures of God and because AMM members are offended by depictions of God as white. The AMM seeks political involvement not only on a local level, but internationally as well. American Muslims and Arab leaders have established ties of friendship and mutual support. AMM members oppose many of the policies of Israel, which has opened them to charges of anti-Semitism. The extent of the American Muslim mission's identification with the Arab world is demonstrated in a sermon Wallace Muhammad preached about the Islamic holy city, Mecca.
People didn't go there. They couldn't plant corn there. They couldn't plant beans or potatoes there. So they didn't go to there. They didn't go there for economic strength. They didn't go to the desert for economic wealth. But now in this last day, God is manifesting his great wisdom. And oh yeah, you thought I only could bless the people with spiritual wealth. Well, I show you, mister, I have had hid under this desert the material wealth. Beneath the barren land flow rivers of oil that have made those people not only spiritually the rich people of the world, but have made them materially the rich people of the world. Is that right? Now the Arabs are the money people of the world. Is that right? You have the best name, Muslim. You have the best religion, Islam. You have the best commandments, the five pillars of Islam. You have also the best book, the Holy Quran. And you have the best Qibla, our center for pilgrims, the Kaaba at Mecca. You have the best because it stands there representing the power of Almighty God to bring out of nothing something.
The AMM's orthodoxy means adherence to the strict dietary and behavioral injunctions of the Quran.
So after you became part of Al-Islam, what kind of things in your life began to change?
Okay, as far as giving up a lot of, you know, involvement and weaknesses such as drinking, smoking, fornicating, you know, just totally sustaining from the weak aspects of my life, you know, and really developing strength in what I believed in. As far as our diets are concerned, we are taught in many religions that we should not partake in the eating of pork. You know, we sustain, and our diets more or less are just really staying towards the natural way. And for example, raw sugar and opposed to granulated white sugar. You know, really we've been through a process of vegetables and natural things to sustain ourselves as far as our eating habits are concerned. As far as our dressing, which I'm sure poses questions in different people mind that are not knowledgeable with Al-Islam, we're taught to dress modestly, okay? It's not written in our holy book, which is the Holy Quran, specifically what to wear, but we feel, as far as moving in society in this time, that the most modest way of dressing is to totally cover your body. Garments to your ankles, long sleeves, a head covering of the head, because all of these our body parts can be seductive or exciting another person. And we really develop the understanding not to be oppressed in that.
I think what you mentioned is maybe the single thing that people have the most trouble understanding of, about al-Islam, the different roles that are set out for men and women. Can you describe just what the different roles are?
Yes, okay. As far as the women in al-Islam, we are the sustainers of the home, our children, our husbands. As far as the men in al-Islam, they are our leadership, okay? The man is the leader. In most religious doctrines or what have you, it is written, Bible, Holy Quran, that the men are the sustainers. They are the leaders.
Unlike members of Western religions with conservative views on women, and unlike Arab Muslim women, American Muslim women are encouraged to work outside the home. Zenobia Shah teaches kindergarten at the Clara Muhammad School in Philadelphia.
Would you like to sing the school song?
Yes.
They're learning it. They are learning the school song. Please stand up. We'll sing the school song.
Sister Clara Muhammad School is dedicated to the total education of the student.
Barlin Talad Safik, principal of the Sister Clara Muhammad School in Philadelphia.
We put emphasis on both the moral and the academic growth and development of our students. We see a relationship between discipline and order and exactly how well the student is able to learn. So we just don't concentrate on the academics by themselves. We also work to develop the character of our students.
The educational theories of the Clara Muhammad faculty seem similar to those of Catholic school teachers. And in fact, Sister Clara Muhammad is a renovated Catholic high school. Boys and girls are taught in separate classrooms. The girls are dressed in long skirts and veils, and the boys in suits. Academic standards are high.
They definitely study basically the same subjects that they have in a public school, your language arts, your math, reading, and other subjects of that nature. In addition, we have our own religion-related subjects, such as Islamic studies. Also, we teach the Arabic language here. These are both very, very important aspects of our academic program.
Tell me something in Arabic, and then tell me what it means.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Kulu barabinas, malikinas, lahinas, menshidu waswasu kanas, alavi waswisu fisadoranas, menajani wanas.
What does it mean in English?
It's a prayer called the dawn, and we still studying it. So far, I got the Arabic part down pat, but not the English part.
Okay. If you had a goal in mind for the kind of adults that you would like your students to grow up to be, what would that be?
I would like them to comfortably accept the religion. With understand why we're striving and working towards incorporating al-Islam in this society. I would definitely want them to be decent, decent, dignified women in society. I feel if they accept the religion, they can go very far. You know, if they just follow out with understanding, they can do anything.
In the Name of Allah, American Muslims is part of a series on religion in America called On This Side of Paradise. It was produced by Maeve McGoran and narrated by Anthony Mateo. Project directors were Ellen Chari and Anthony Mateo. It was produced for the Temple University Religion Department at WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Executive director was Professor Gerhard Spiegler of Temple University. Production assistant was Greg Allen. Engineers were Jay Goldman, Joyce Lieberman, Scotty Williams, and John Knapp. Special thanks to Dr. Ishmael Al-Faruqi. This program was made possible by grants from the Pennsylvania Humanities Council, the Samuel S. Fells Fund, and the Institute for Islamic Thought and Culture.
This is Fresh Air on WHYY-FM in Philadelphia, and with me is one of the people who you just heard from in the preceding documentary. Our phones are now open for your questions and comments at 923-2774. My guest is Shamsuddin Ali, the imam or spiritual leader of the Philadelphia Mosque of the American Muslim Mission. The American Muslim Mission has four mosques in Philadelphia, including the Sister Clara Muhammad School, which extends from kindergarten through 12th grade. We invite you to call with any questions or comments provoked by the documentary that you just heard. Our phone number again for your questions is 923-2774, and we're at area code 215. Our series On This Side of Paradise concludes next Tuesday at 4 o'clock, when the subject will be singing a new song, The Catholic Left. After the documentary, we'll be joined for a follow-up discussion by Father Michael Doyle, a social activist priest who has a parish in Camden, and Joan Bauer, who was a nun but left because she didn't think the convent was active enough in social issues. She later left the church in frustration over their conservatism on women's issues. Cassettes of these documentaries will soon be available through Temple University. For more information, you can call 787-8265. Again, for more information about cassettes of the series, 787-8265. Our phone number for your questions and comments on the air is 923-2774. Welcome to Fresh Air, Imam Ali.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to ask you before we get to our first phone call how you became a Muslim. I know you were brought up in a Christian family.
Yes. Actually, becoming a Muslim was rather easy by the fact that I had grown up as a Christian, had attended church very frequently. In fact, all the time. I attended Sunday school and then follow-up church every Sunday. My mother insisted on that. So I had a religious interest, and I think religious interest really actually stimulated me to be a Muslim. I think that first hearing of Al-Islam probably made me a better Christian first. And then I ventured further to learn more about religion and the significance of religion as it should be to the human being's life, and that's what really actually brought me into the religion of Al-Islam.
How were you introduced to it?
Well, actually, introduction was more or less made by someone mentioning the religion to me, which I had no knowledge of, and then them mentioning it, and by fact that they did mention it, I went to attend, and I did attend, a mosque over on Lancaster Avenue. This is some years ago, a number of years ago. And at that time, it was a man by the name of Nasser Ahmed there as the imam. And he was a very, very conscientious, very sincere person. And I used to talk with him every now and then, and that brought an interest to me for the religion.
Well, let's take our first phone call. And my guest is Imam Ali, who is the spiritual leader of the Philadelphia Mosque of the American Muslim Mission. And again, our question, our phone number for your questions is 923-2774. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hello. Hello, is I'm on the air?
Yes, you are.
Yes. As a Jew, I rediscovered my own religion about 4 years ago, and it was a joy to me. I had never been religious, and I had rediscovered it and began to go to synagogue and live my life as a Jew. And at the same time, I met some Muslim friends and discovered, to my amazement, how close and how similar the Muslim and Jewish religions are, and it was a joy to me because I grew up Muslims and were anathema when I grew up, and it was a joy to me. And the pain, that was the joy, and it continues to be a joy. The pain is that we Jews and Muslims, that anybody hurts each other is a pain, but certainly, you know, that Jews and Muslims continue not to understand each other, and we do on an individual basis, but we're not given enough chance to. And so that's basically what I want to say. And I just, it was just an incredible joy to me to discover Muslim friends and to discover that we not only talked about the same God, but in the same way. And my pain is that we don't that there's not enough of that.
Do you want to comment on that?
Yes, you're indeed a credit to humanity. We certainly appreciate your comments. You're exactly right. They need to spend more time simply understanding each other, because it does hurt to see the kind of strife and harm that they're doing to each other.
Do you feel the connection between Islam and Judaism that our listener commented on?
Yes, I think that that identity is there with all religions, but certainly with the Jewish and Islamic faiths. They're very close, and in fact, you'll find a lot of the principles in with the Jewish and Islamic faith to be quite similar.
Thank you for your phone call. And our number for any questions or comments, 923-2774. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for these episodes. I wanted to mention that. And good afternoon to your guest. I am a black grandmother. I always like to say that before I make a statement, because I think some people think I'm a wild-eyed radical. I would like to compliment the Nation of Islam. They're the only religious body or any other body that I have seen in this country that has had a dynamic, positive force on black, young black America. But I'm a little puzzled by the patriotism that I hear coming out of some factions of Islam today. And I know, first of all, I'm an agnostic. So I think everybody uses their religion to suit their own purpose. And I keep referring to an article when I hear Wallace D. Muhammad proclaim his patriotism, downing communists, just buying the whole Cold War bit. And it's from the book The Covenant. And it tells about a faithful old ex-black Zulu fighter who stands beside his South African master in the war with England. And he observes. He doesn't fight. You know, he's the carrier of buckets of water loading up ammunition. And as he observes, and this wasn't unique in this war, he's hoping that his master will win. But what he intends to do and pass down to his children is that when this war is over and the games are ended and the mighty guns are silenced, the real struggle will begin. And it will not be Englishmen against Boer. It will be white man against black. And I hope they take this into consideration. And thank you for the program.
Thanks for your call. Would you like to comment on our listeners?
Yes, I think that I'd first like to say that I believe I understand what she's saying, and I believe that my heart holds great sympathy for the things that she's considering. At the same time, I would like to state that our patriotism is really something that's very important to us and very important to America. It's very important to our foreparents, because we recognize and we understand that in order to reorder the situation that we are finding ourselves in today, we must retrieve the best from an earlier time, as well as identify that it is the best presently. In an earlier time, we'd have to conclude that our foreparents were nothing but basically what we find in and all of the human beings possess it, their human life. So therefore, when they were here in 1776, they were having and holding aspirations for freedom and things of that nature, just as other people in the 13 colonies. But they were not at that time permitted to speak about it, nor were they asked, and they did not have an opportunity to take advantage of the freedom that was achieved by the 13 colonies by their severance of the British hold on them. So what we had to remember is patriotism itself at this point is an illustration of showing the sincere dedication and the revival of a spirit that once was not allowed to be heard, therefore considered to be dead. If we are Americans in the true sense of what our foreparents aspired to, then certainly patriotism would be something comfortable for us. But we'll have to understand, and I hope that she'll get closer to us so that she'll get more information about that.
Let's take another phone call. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hi, let me first state my biases. I'm a secular humanist, and I see most of the major religions of the world as being sexist. Okay, now, going from there, I'd like to know why, and I have been affiliated with Arab people, especially in the West Philadelphia area. I kind of lived in the Arab community for a couple of years. I'd like to know why the assumption is made that a woman's body tempts men, but that a man's body does not tempt women. Because they don't have to cover up like the women have to cover up.
Well, I wouldn't say that the man's body doesn't tempt women. I don't know. I wouldn't be able to say that. But
well, their hair isn't covered. Their face isn't covered. They don't have to wear skirts down to the ground. When a man wears pants, you can see the outlines of his body. Without a veil, you can see his face. Without something covering the hair, you can see his hair.
Well, what I was preparing to say to you, I'm not saying that men do not tempt women, and I do think that it's probably overwhelmingly agreed that women most certainly are more tempting to men than men are to them. At least the women seem to exercise more of an intelligent restraint in their sexual behavior than men in our society we call Western society. I agree that they should be covered properly, and both should be dressed modest, and I think that that is better for all. And what you see in the religion of Al-Islam is an attempt to really actually make the contributions as proper for the whole humanity, irregardless of the kind of responsibility it brings to us as individuals who are presently aware and conscious of our responsibility. We have to make it for the benefit of humanity. So therefore, we intend nothing but good for everyone that's involved.
But that doesn't answer my question.
Certainly, we are not. What I'm saying to you is that we do not subject women to anything and make them go against their will. The women in Al-Islam have an understanding, just as the men have an understanding, and they accept the responsibility. It's willful, it is not by force.
Oh, you mean women, to be members in good standing of Al-Islam, do not have to dress like that?
No, I'm saying women who want to actually perform the responsibility that's upon them as Muslim women for the whole of humanity, they would and they do accept to dress modestly and to dress as you see them.
But what about the men? Now, are they not performing the responsibility by not covering up all the way?
Well, you're not required to cover your face. I mean, you're required to cover your body, but not your face. Your hands and your face and your feet can very well be out. There may be some traditions that have been picked up really not so much from the religion as from other cultures, really, that really actually advocate the covering of the face. But that's not something that's really advocated or placed upon the women in the Quran.
What about covering the hair? Is that mentioned in the Quran?
Covering the hair is certainly mentioned, yes.
Thank you very much for your call. Our listener said that she is not religious herself and thinks of the religions of the world as being mostly sexist.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an issue for the people who are Muslims? I mean, would you consider what she was saying to be a sign of sexism, and is that an issue
No.
That you'd think about?
No, ma'am, it's not an issue because, see, what we actually do is we live, as Dr. Faruqi said in the documentation, he said something in regards to the universality of the religion. And certainly we had to see the universality clearly by the laws that are universally known for the by all of us. So therefore, family structure, male and female, these things are already designed by the creator of all of us. So do we know the woman is the woman, the man is the man, and from the two of them in union, we have offspring and continuation of humanity. So respectfully, we try to live within those laws to the best of our knowledge. And the best knowledge for human society, of course, is that knowledge that was revealed scripture to prophets. And so the Quran is what we follow, and we find it being no different in its clear illustration of the responsible truths that we have to hurt ourselves to in the Quran, and it is another clear scripture, a scripture that has not been tampered with.
Let's take another phone call. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to commend our Shamsuddin Ali and the Nation of Islam or American Muslim Mission. I've heard of the great work that Shamsuddin was doing for, you know, for he's going to the prisons and visiting the inmates and, you know, just talking to them and everything. It just really enlightened me to, you know, see that being behind the fact that my father is, you know, unfortunately in one of those institutions. And I just want to commend him and say he's doing a great job for the Nation of Islam, and, you know, tell them to keep up the good work. And I would like to be there one day to, you know, just to be there to, you know, see how he operates.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your call.
Thank you for your call. Our number, if you have any questions or comments, is 923-2774, or at area code 215. From 4 to 4:30 today, we heard a documentary called In the Name of Allah, American Muslims. And with me is one of the people who spoke on that documentary, Imam Ali, who is the spiritual leader of the Philadelphia Mosque of the American Muslim Mission. And our number again for your questions, 923-2774. Hello, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Thank you. I consider myself to be a Christian and a woman, and as such, I am told I have a soul. It seems to me the Muslim religion teaches definitely a male sexist religion, because it teaches that women do not have souls, only men have souls. And that being the case, why should any woman want to become a Muslim?
Well, my sister, I can't for the world imagine where you got that kind of situation in your mind. When you say, I think we all, and I think we all agree, we all have souls. We're not our own creator. We didn't create ourselves, and we are all really just one expression of a life. And when that one expression of life continues, it continues by the way of a relationship between male and female. I'm not saying that women doesn't have souls. I think it would be ridiculous for us to even think that.
Thank you very much for your call. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hello. The first part of my question is as follows. I belong to two churches, and the churches, they don't treat me like a person because I'm handicapped, right? They treat me as if I wasn't there. And the second part of my question is, how many Jewish people join the Muslims?
Well, I don't know how many Jewish people join. I know that people from all various nationalities do join in the religion of Al-Islam. And I do hope and pray that whatever churches you attend, that they will quickly assume their responsibility and not treat you as anything other than a human being needing and desiring and deserving the assistance of all of us.
Thank you for your phone call. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air, and we're getting close to the end of the show, so I'll ask you to keep it brief.
Who has lived in both Iran and Indonesia, one country being Sunni and the other Shiite, I'd like to ask just how you feel about the present behavior of Shiite Islam in Iran, the attitude toward America. Do you think that the venomous point of view is really justified?
I believe that any spelling out of people's emotions to the extent that they cannot get a hearing eventually becomes a bother to all of us. I think that when we look at Iran, we're looking at a very, very serious situation by fact of their experiences under the Shah and the way that they have actually had to go about
Don't you think that it goes against Islamic teaching, the intense antagonism toward people of different views and the murder of people with whom they don't agree?
Well, there's a lot of opinions that I'm not... There's a lot of opinions that I'm not totally aware of and therefore cannot give any real statement of whether or not those things are true. I don't know whether they are true or not, but I know that Islam doesn't advocate, and I know that they are Muslims.
Thank you for your call. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air, and please keep your question brief.
I'm Reagan, and I would like to say for the people that are curious in terms of the Muslim dress for men and women, first of all, men are clothed in their fashion, and it is modest, covering their pants do usually come down to the ankles as the requirement with a Muslim woman. But for those that have curiosity and really are speaking from no knowledge of personal knowledge, they ought to just go out to the masjid and see just what things are about before they form opinions and make judgments.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. Regret that that's all the time we'll have for phone calls this afternoon. There's one last question I'd like to ask you. As you told us, you were raised in a Christian family and are now a Muslim. I think that there are probably many people from families like yours whose parents were or still are Christians and they have become Muslims and their children are being brought up in a Muslim home. Do you think that that divides black families where that happens, where one generation is Christian and the other generation Muslim? Or is that just an accepted part of life now?
I don't think it divides them. As earlier stated, upon hearing the religion of Al-Islam, I believe, and my recollection serves me quite clearly on that, I became a better Christian first because it made me more conscious of religious responsibility, and it also gave me a greater insight into what would be actually my responsibility as a person having a religion. So I think that what we're witnessing now, particularly under the leadership of Imam Warfdi Muhammad, who has brought about the clear understanding of the religion of Al-Islam for the once nation of Islam, the families are strengthened, I think. I would have to say they're strengthened.
I want to thank you very much for speaking with us and for responding to questions from our listeners. I want to thank our listeners as well for calling in with their questions and comments. And with me has been Shamsuddin Ali, who is the imam or spiritual leader of the Philadelphia Mosque of the American Muslim Mission. Our discussion was preceded by a half-hour documentary titled In the Name of Allah, American Muslims. Our four-part series, On This Side of Paradise, A Look at American Religions, concludes next Tuesday at 4 o'clock, when the subject will be Singing a New Song, The Catholic Left. We'll be joined for a follow-up discussion by Father Michael Doyle, a social activist priest who has a parish in Camden, and Joan Bauer, who was a nun but left the convent because she didn't think it was active enough in social issues. She later left the church in frustration over their conservatism on women's issues. Cassettes of the series On This Side of Paradise will soon be available through Temple University. For more information about cassette transcripts, you can call 787-8265. That's 787-8265. The documentaries that we're listening to were produced by Maeve McGoran at WHYY-FM with project directors Ellen Cherry and Tony Matteo of Temple University's Religion Department. It's 3 minutes to 5 o'clock, and we'll be joining National Public Radio at 5 for tonight's edition of All Things Considered. I'll tell you what's happening tomorrow afternoon on Fresh Air after we check in with Shadow Traffic.
Good afternoon, everyone. The Tacony Palmyra Bridge is on standby for an opening for a tug pushing a couple of barges. Now, the latest word that this is moving very slowly northbound from the area of the Del Air Railroad Bridge, and it may reach the Tacony Palmyra around 5. Of course, once that opens up, you are going to have very heavy congestion on the approach streets to the bridge. Westbound Vine Street downtown, slow approaching 22nd through the expressway. Once you get westbound on the Schuylkill Expressway, just a minor delay at Vine, normal volume eastbound on the Schuylkill. If you're traveling northbound on I-95, that is running slow, about a half mile right now, approaching Aramingo due to an earlier mattress fire. Now, that's off to the side of the highway. Police are still out there. Southbound 95 backing down from the Girard Point S-curve through the Platte Detour Road at Island, and a minor delay on westbound 291 at Bartram. And that's shadow traffic for WHYY 91 FM. I'm Priscilla Fox.
That shadow traffic report was funded with a grant from Superfresh. Tomorrow afternoon on Fresh Air at 3 o'clock, we expect to hear from Joe Nathan, author of a new book called Free to Teach, Achieving Equity and Excellence in Schools. And for the past few years, he's been an assistant principal at a school in Minnesota. And he got his start teaching in the alternative school movement, and his analysis of the schools and how they can be improved is included in this book, Free to Teach. At 3:40, rock critic Ken Tucker will be with us for Hearing Secret Harmonies. And at 4 o'clock, I'll speak with Dave Marsh, who has been writing about rock and roll for many years. He used to be a columnist and editor at Rolling Stone, was a founder of Cream magazine, and has written a new book about The Who, the band The Who, called Before I Get Old. Dave Marsh also now publishes a small journal called Rock and Roll Confidential, which Robert Christgau described as being the first tip sheet about the ethics of rock and roll. So that's all coming up tomorrow afternoon on Fresh Air, and I hope you can be listening. Joyce Lieberman was the technical director to today's show. Maeve McGoran is the associate producer, Danny Miller the co-producer of the program. My name's Terry Gross. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a very good evening. This is WHYY-FM in Philadelphia, where listener-supported public radio in the Delaware Valley.
Good evening from National Public Radio in Washington. This is Noah Adams.
And I'm Susan Stamberg with All Things Considered.
I think a reporter's
obligation in terms of nailing somebody is to put it in the story. I do believe you have a responsibility, and that responsibility is to print it. It is not to hand carry it to the government.
Journalist Aaron Latham, he has written about John DeLorean, the automaker who was indicted for selling cocaine. Latham has now been subpoenaed to be a witness for the defense. He says he will not show up in court.
Also, these stories on Capitol Hill, strong opposition to Senator Jesse Helms, the issue that proposed Martin Luther King holiday.
Stanley Carno on Vietnam and LBJ.
Betty Friedan on two decades of the feminine mystique.
The story of America's new leisure class.
And contented cows.